Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community, the communityeducationnetwork.com, the podcast Conscious Corner, and this show are platforms to aid the effort of self and collective improvement. I am your host, Rasaki Mascani. This evening guest is Brother Rio. Brother Rio is a close friend of my brother's, and I have known him through my brother. He has been successful as a student athlete on the college level, and now he's successful in his career that he currently has. So, Brother Rio, good evening. If you like, you could tell us something about yourself, and then we can get to the discussion of how to curb violence among the youth.
And thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, brother.
Welcome.
It's an honor. It's an honor and a pleasure, brother. Like I said, like you said, I'm just looking for answers like we all are, you know, been around the sun now 50 times. So after being the age that we are, that we all are, the age group that we all are, you know, just seeing, you know, the youth right now, even though we all grew up in, I'm pretty, well, at least for myself, grew up in a battle zone area as a minor, as a youth, it still just didn't seem as, it still has some type of like integrity behind it. I'm not trying to condone it and say it was right when we were younger, but right now, man, it's just wild. So I'm trying to see what we can do as elders now to step in and try to guide it just a little bit better and try to preserve what we have left, you know, in the youth and all demographics, you know. And just trying to see where we can go and how I can help each one teach one, you know.
Yeah, now I want to introduce everybody because I don't only introduce myself and the guests. So I'm going to introduce the panelists here this evening. We got Professor Amon Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State, Long Beach. Then we have Miss Kathy Williams, which is a friend of ours that we grew up on the same street. And then we have Brother Lucinda, also a real close friend. We grew up on the same street. So this is a family and a public platform. So now to kind of have a context, let's kind of identify what's causing the violence. You know, I looked up a few things on a computer, and plus I've been working with students and youth since 1988. So I kind of have some ideas. So I'm gonna start off. We're gonna set the context by identifying, and then we can start talking about the solutions. So let's start with Kathy.
Uh-huh.
Ms. Williams, now, can we kind of point to what is causing this violence amongst
one of the top of the list is the breakdown of the family. First of all, it's very few two-parent households, which I'm not saying one parent can't raise, but the guidance, everything starts at home. What you see at home, what you learn at home, your first learning and everything, your first experiences start right there where you desire, you know, where you reside at. So basically, environment and basically your basic foundation, you know, you have to catch them when they're little, put some values and morals into them. We got whooped, we got spanked, but now you whoop and spank a child, it's a whole different story, you know? So that's one of the places we can start at right there.
Thanks for that. Okay, Brother Mashinda.
Yeah, good evening. I agree with Kathy was saying, you know, it starts at home. You know, it's definitely, that's the, you know, point A. You know, that's ground zero, you know. And what comes out of that household, It doesn't mean that it can't be repaired or, you know, guided in the right direction when you leave the household. That's part of the issue. That's one. So it's twofold in a way. It's that household, but, you know, I think a long time ago we've determined that, you know, it's a given. You're a mathematician, so in the problem, there's a given. There's a given in terms of, you know, okay, yeah, there's, you know, part of the issues in terms of why youth choose violence or go in that direction. You know, of course, there's no, you know, nobody's minding the store, nobody's minding the house, nobody's minding the children, you know. And so 11 o'clock at night, I guess, remember that old commercial? I know back in the day when I was a kid, it's what is it? It's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your children are? So we've established that already, that there's a breakdown. You know, I think Ms. Williams just said that, you know, the two parent family, you know, was dissolved in a lot of cases, including my own, you know. So once you leave the home, the school system spends more time with your child, you know, than the parent. Okay. So if the school system spends more time with the parent, I'm talking about Monday through Friday, you know, you look at the school hours, you know, if the parent's at work or whatever, everybody gets home, do homework, eat, take a bath, you know, probably, you know, some have some quality talk, maybe. But still, my point is the school system spend more time with your child. So the public who votes, I guess, and put people in office on school boards and, you know, create agendas and control the narrative and all those buzz phrases, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it has to be a changing of the guard. It has to be people empowered to, you know, that's going to work, that works in this, everyone on the call that's worked in school system, they have, including myself, we do all we can. And currently doing all I can on a daily basis, you know, working with kids, you know, trying to guide them in the right direction and give them basic fundamentals of life and learning and how to respect, as Ms. Williams said, and so forth. It's been, you know, I've been in the game professionally since 1983, and you know, dealing with kids and adults too, up until today. And so I conclude, you know, that unless the school system has something in place to take, you know, to take the baton once that kid leaves the home, then the percentage or the risk factors are greater if the school system doesn't have the resources in place. You know, you have sides talk about, oh, it's, you know, what is socialism or this or that. No, it's about, you know, what baffles me, not even baffles me, it's pretty clear, you know, the United States is a Christian-based country. You, your brother's keeper, and all these other quotes, right? But at the same time, they're not keeping anything. They're not looking out for anything. People, the poverty level, all the levels, you know, mortality rates, all kind of things. So the thing about it is, people don't want to live around each other, and they don't want to help their children. And it's, you know, the people in power don't have a vested interest in your children. And so there lies the problem, because the discipline, I know when I was coming, we had discipline in the school and we respected that. But the guys that wanted to go to the penitentiary, they continued to act a fool and they went on and did their thing, you know. But I'm just saying, I'm talking about percentage wise, most of the kids were all drunk. We played a lot of sports. We had a lot of activities. A lot of things have dwindled, you know, but the guidance is not there too. And so that's the problem. And so until those things are fixed, it's a big issue. But that's my little take right now.
Okay, thanks. Professor Ra?
Bani Gani, everyone. It's good to hear some of the commentary that's been made. Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. And the primary question is, what was the primary question? Because I'm,
well,
you know,
I wanted to kind of just set the pace by asking, what is causing this violence amongst our kids?
Oh, well, you know, there's different types of violence. There's different reasons people have violence. You know, even in the penal code, there's different measures of violence. But most, if you're talking about Black children, or you're talking about white children, white adults, white males, for each group, maybe female, male, there's different reasons why they participate in violence. But the common thread is they're product of America. If you're talking about American people that participate in violence, it's hard to stop drive-bys if your country do flybys. You learn violence from the environment that you're in. That's psychological. I taught Black psychology. I taught Black juvenile. And I've taught the needs of the ghetto child at Cal State Long Beach. And there's a lot of writings and studies on that. I think Alvin Postain wrote a book, Why Blacks Kill Blacks. There's a number of positions that people have. There's philosophies. But the key, one of the key reasons is that they come up in a culture of violence. That's how people solve their problems. Maybe domestic violence, even in the family. You know, people be saying, well, it's the family, but people come from good homes, kill. I mean, rich people kill, you know, and rob and steal, even though they have things. As Mashinda was saying, he's in juvenile hall. Working with young youth, you find youth that their parents bought them everything. They just say, well, I just wanted to get it myself. So that's why I went out and robbed. You know, I mean, they come up in a two-parent home and everything. But you learn it from America. You're a product of America. Now, how do you stop it? You develop a different mindset. It's like what the scripture said. You may be in the world, but don't be of the world. I changed that to, don't let the world change you, change the world. I had three boys and three girls, and none of them went through school the way I went through school. I was violent. I was real violent. You know, I mean, my rep still stands in certain places, you know. All the way up to college, I was violent. You know, if you want to throw down, let's throw down. Let's get it on. You know, from fighting to shooting to gang-banging, all of that. But I made sure my children didn't see me like that when I changed. And I changed culturally. I changed my name. I changed my value system from an Afrocentric. You're in a war zone. Wherever, as Malcolm X said, wherever Black people are, it's a war zone. So much reasons for the influence of violence, but people make millions of dollars off almost all your Academy Award winning movies in the 70s all the way up to the 2000s with violent movies. You know, The Godfather won all kind of cutting off horses' heads and make you an offer you can't refuse, but greed. And envy. People see people with things they want, you know, and only way to get it is to take it. The only thing you have in the morning is what you take. Though, like Rio say, I mean, we grow up in the hood, you know, families were violence, you know. The first gangs were families, you know. And then they grew and grew until extended families became members, the Densons, the Nelsons. You know, the Pygmies, these, you know, people, families looked out for each other in our neighborhood. But we got all that from the McCoys and the McClintons fighting, or cowboys fighting, and watching Roy Rogers and watching Gene Autry and watching all that stuff psychologically, parents buying cap guns for Christmas and, you know, all of that. Stuff that you don't know psychologically influence the children and your behavior, your language. You talk violently, I kill that. I mean, you see them MFs, I blow that And the parents need to tell kids, if somebody hits you, you hit them and run home. You understand? And pick up a stick and hit them and run home. I mean, our parents used to tell us that when we was coming up. Don't let nobody bully you. Don't let nobody mess with you. And if anybody mess with your sister, if you don't fight them, I'm going to beat you. If you don't jump in. I mean, all of that affects you if you don't have a value system. As Kathy was saying, a moral and ethical philosophy. That I'm not going to let what the European want us to do or do. They right now, America has more wars than any other country. They finance wars. Their politics is violent. I remember some teachers used to bring boxing gloves and say, hey, let them box and box and to sell the problem. I mean, so violence is a part of America, as H. Rap Brown said one time. Violence is just as much American as apple pie. And this book, he wrote this book, Violent Criminals and Violent Crime. He said, look, Black people and Latinos didn't bring violence to America. They learned it once they got here, whipping them and tearing them apart and forcing them into servitude. African people, they transformed them, and if you don't represent a change to your family, when my kids came, I had to change. I didn't want them to grow up. I lost partners getting shot. I lost partners going to penitentiary. I lost partners on drugs, selling drugs, trying to defend their turf. I lost partners. I said, let me change, and I got into my Blackness and my Afrocentricity. And none of my kids had a fight going to school because I told them, you don't fight. You come to me and we'll deal with it. I told them, hey, don't fight. Don't even go watch a fight. If they fighting on campus, don't even go watch a fight. And then we had a peaceful home. When I came up, as I conclude, my father was brutal. He hit you, didn't tell you why. I said, man, why don't you just tell me to move, man? But he hit you, didn't tell you why. So that's how he was brought up. He never went to got past the sixth grade. And that's how his parents raised him. And they believed in that Bible stuff. Spare the rod, you spoil the child. I mean, they used to beat the hell out of us. I never had to raise my hands to my children because I dealt with them with love and a mentality that you Black people. And if you love me, you'll behave. But, you never stop. You have to have your kids love you more than they love D-Dog, Wild Dog, Puppy. And Spanky and Doodoo Boy and all that. That's about it, Rashiki.
Okay, thanks. That was all right, Professor Ron. All right, Brother Henry.
Sorry for tuning in late. I missed the initial.
Basically, we started off with what causes violence amongst our youths. And then, like Professor Ross segue into how to, curb that violence by doing certain things. So that's what we're discussing. So we're looking forward to your contribution.
Well, the nature of this land is violence. Those initial Americans that were sent here, weren't here Americans, the Europeans who were dumped off here out of European prisons and jails, that was the first, Europeans that brought that kind of stuff here. They sent about half of them to America and the other half to Australia. And I don't have to tell you how a prison mentality is. And they just grew out of that and grew out of indentured servitude. And, you know, those end up being the founding fathers later on that wrote the constitutions and whatnot to these lands. But speaking of today, you know, you got to put stuff in its historical perspective. You know, prior to us being captured and invaded by the Arabs and the Europeans and, you know, voted out around the world, you know, we didn't have all that stuff going on. You know, our mindset was totally different. We thought from the other side of the brain, but you can find out in the book, Medu Netter, you know, talking about the writings of Tahuti, you know, but, you know, as we associated with people, we kind of brought on a sort of, you know, type of assimilation. But if you're thinking with the right frame of mind, you can categorize areas, like, for instance, that television that promotes a lot of the stuff. You have to be able to categorize that. You know, that's a TV, that's not real. But some of these kids cannot make that distinction today because their family structure has been obliterated. You know what I mean? Talking about in the last 25, 30 years, you know, about this. I'm assuming that's what we're talking about, the kids that were products of that. Well, what did they come from? You know, they didn't have any leadership. They didn't have, you know, stuff to, you know, I remember when I was coming up, if a neighbor saw you doing something, they would whoop your butt. You got home, your parents whooped your butt. You try that today. You try to check somebody else's child about doing wrong. And when the parent get home, you got to fight them. They don't want to hear about, you know, what you tell them about their child, you know, try to prevent them from going to the penitentiary and all of that. You have to ball up your fists with them. But anyway, and from that stuff, an apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. They grow up seeing it. You know, our neighborhoods have been bombarded with guns and drugs for this purpose. You know, this stuff is by design and it's not just here. It's an international thing. And would make you see that this is a total conspiracy, you know, to break us up because they fear what we really are and what we've been and what we could possibly be. And they don't want to give up the power. And pretty much that's it. So, you know, the Klan to a degree is retired in certain instances because of what we've been doing to ourselves. And we can't seem to get above the fray of that. I tried my damnedest for 39 years trying to change the mindset. You know, you get one or two every now and then. But most of them would tell me, Mr. Hembrick, there's too much blood been shed. You know, I said, well, if you keep on doing that, there ain't gonna be no blood left. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you kind of save who you can. You can't save every puppy in the pound. But I think a commune with nature would do wonders for kids. You know, all the years I taught at the 10, had a bunch of kids who had never been to the beach, and it's right down the street. You know, nature seems to do something for you if you get out in it. And that's, and because of our American society is so techie and sidewalk and all of that, you know, we don't look at nature like we should look at it. Nature can teach us a whole lot of things about ourselves, how to live, and the whole nine. But, you know, the rat race of America, you know, can keep you off point, you know, just trying to survive up in here. So, I don't know. Maybe somebody can, you know, give us some information if I missed it earlier about what we can do about this. But I know it takes a mindset. That's first of all and foremost. Anyway, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Brother Hembrick. So, Brother Rio, you want to speak on kind of like some solutions, something you think that will help?
Yeah, I'm listening to the panel, and I heard two of the panel people on the panel, persons on the panel, spoke about not being in a two-parent home. Most of the children being raised in one-parent homes, but you know, I somewhat have to disagree with that as being one of the issues, because that's not something that we're, you know, we've always been in a one-parent home since 1542, pretty much, you know. We're immune to that. And it always was a village that raised us. You know, it was always a village that raised us in our culture. So growing up, like I said, I grew up in Compton. I grew up in Linwood, grew up in Watts. And I grew up, you know, I was born in early 70s. So I seen it when it first came on. But I think some of the issues lie along the lines of accountability and inclusion. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. You know, and I don't have the solution. I'm looking for it, because like I said earlier, you know, being mid-century now, being around the sun 50 times, you know, I got more years behind me than I got in front of me. And I got kids and grandkids here, and our culture is here. And I want to see us, you know, survive. But accountability is something that we don't have in our community. And if you think about every other demographic, there's accountability there. And I hope that the panel doesn't take this the wrong way, but there's somewhat of a mafia in most cultures. Now, I'm not going to name those cultures, because I don't, you know, I don't want that to be the idea of the host, but we don't have that. We don't have nobody that we have to answer to, nobody that we do answer to. And that came by way of inclusion. We were forced to, we were looking for inclusion so soon without, you know, recognizing our natural resource, which is us, you know? So I look at two people, I look back in history, and not even that far back, a little over 50 years ago, I look back at two people that I'm like, man, I wish they could have gotten it. And maybe they did, you know? That's a question to be asked. But I look at Mr. Berry Gordy, and I look at Mr. Don King, and I wish I could ask them, you know, you guys had control of the natural resource that we have here in this country, and that's us, entertainment. We don't control that natural resource. So our wealth is gone. That's the only thing. We don't have a country to go to. African Americans that were here since the late 1500s to current, we don't have a country to go to. This is our country. We built this country. So this is our country. And every other country had the natural resource in that country. Those people benefit from it. That country benefit from it. Their GDP benefits from it. We are on our GDP for us as our culture is us as entertainers, which is athletes, you know, and actors and actresses. But we don't control that natural resource. And I looked at Mr. Don King. You just think of every athlete since late 60s to current had to sign under King, and every entertainer, actor, rapper, singer had to sign under Berry Gordy. You know, we would have a lot of wealth, man. We would have controlled that wealth. That's my take on it. And, you know, I take criticism and correction. If you guys correct me and criticize it, you know, I want to, like I said, I'm probably one of the youngest members on the panel. So, but
you are.
So I look at that, like, but I just look at, like, we don't have any accountability. And then I heard the last speakers speak about the guns that have bombarded the community, you know, that too I have a problem with, because we always had guns in the house. Since Jim Crow South, every Black family had guns in the house. My grandmother had 2-3 guns and they just laid around. You know, everybody had guns in the house. But what happened again, we lost control of that natural resource. You know, coming up, man, KRS-One, I learned more about Black history from Public Enemy, KRS-One, early Ice Cube, Poor Righteous Teachers. I learned about it, it excited me, just like, you know what, let me learn more about myself. It took me all the way back to ancient Kemet. That's how the music was. But now we don't have control of that anymore. We don't control our music no more. We don't control our image no more. So I think that right there is sending the youth into a spiral, brother. That's like, and the keepers, the gatekeepers before the entertainers that's right now in the modern era, it's almost like they've been silenced. Like, man, don't say nothing, you know, or you'll be moved on. Because there's no way in the world that a genre of music that was pretty much created by us, that we can't police that. The founders can't police that. I mean, I'm talking about going all the way back to Kool Herc. Hey man, you know what? That's not what we're about to do right now. And I love Ice Cube, brother. That's one of the he's one of the greats on the West. He's one of the greats in that industry, period. But to move from the first 3 albums and go to West Side Connect, which I love Dove C. I love his music, man. But I love Mac 10's music and his catalog. But it was like almost like it seemed like someone just said, hey man, you know what? Go here now with it. And first 3 albums of Cube was not that. It was not that West Side Connect mentality. And it's almost like that's when I see like it started to drop off a little bit. Because the music is controlling it a lot, you know. The vibrations from the music is controlling it a lot, you know. So the frequencies that the music is on right now is controlling it a lot, I believe. You know, I don't have no hard evidence where I can back and support that. But I know it. If I even try to even listen to something modern, which I do every now and then, it affects the way I drive. I drive different. It affects the way that I feel. So I'm like, man, you know what? We don't control it anymore. When we controlled it, our youth was, it was still violence, but it wasn't disrespect. You know, it was not disrespect. And it wasn't against the everyday civilian. You know, it was, if you was in a tribe, that tribe, and I'm not condoning that. I never was in a tribe like that. And I grew up around it. But if you were in that tribe, that's the only thing that tribe went after that tribe. It wasn't every day. Like right now, it's anybody can get it. And a lot of that is like the brother said earlier, what the television is speaking to you, what that image is speaking to you, what that image is, what they're painting right now. We don't control the brush. We don't control the paint. We don't control the canvas. We don't control none of that. And it was, like I said, those two individuals I mentioned earlier, they had it. And they probably still control a little bit, or, you know, but I just wonder what it would have been like to have every athlete from like Muhammad Ali all the way to LeBron underneath Don King, and every entertainer from Motown all the way to what we have now currently, to all the entertainers, actors and actresses right now under Gordy. We would have controlled a lot of wealth. That's a lot of wealth that's went out that we don't control. That's the only resource we have. We don't have no mining. We don't control agriculture here. We don't control the water here. Nothing. That's the only thing And that's a multi-billion dollar industry. And we don't control our own resource, man. And I think that's where, if we can have the youth recognize that and how great they really are and how powerful they are, you know, in terms of that, then I think that can probably take it down a notch if we start controlling those vehicles that entertainment comes off of.
Okay. Hey, Brother Rio, that's a good observation in my opinion. Now, one thing you said about accountability, and you mentioned the mafia and other ethnic groups. Now, this is exactly why we have this platform here. It's about changing the mindset. And then that mafia should be a value system that Professor Ra was speaking of. And this is all in my perspective. Just violence alone, we learn, like Professor Ra said, our parents whooped us, their parents whooped them, and so on and so on. And where did all of that come from? It probably came out of, and this is my opinion, out of slave beatings. You know, the psychological warfare that has been put amongst us. So if we could educate and develop a value system through platforms like this, then we don't have to look to a mafia. What we go to is a mentality, which is the value system, and it will have us think twice before we, you know, act. That's one thing. And you mentioned the music. The music is very powerful, like you were saying, vibrations. Yes, I can recall where I had to stop listening to certain music because the beat was good, but the lyrics was detrimental, especially to our women, Black women, calling them bitches. And then the glorification of violence. That's very powerful with the music, especially if it has a great beat. When Snoop Dogg came out and Dr. Dre, the music was based off of music from the 70s. Yeah. You know, and it had powerful beat, and it got everybody going. You could dance to it. Nothing like what they got now. I can't even listen to this stuff now. So that's another thing. And then violence. I used to be an advocate of whipping children. I'm not now. You know, I had to change my mentality, like Professor Ra was saying. And you get a different outcome, you know, through spending time with your children. And, you know, they got to know you mean business, but the constant whooping and violence, that kind of messes up their head. And that's how they learn how to convey themselves with other people, how to relate to other people through violence, because they were violently raised. So we all talked about that. So I want to go back to Ms. Williams. Ms. Williams, a response from you.
Well, everything's been pretty interesting, and I see I see everybody's points of view, but like as far as solutions, like one was like what would you call redirecting, like one of the panelists said nature, and then like music, an outlet for something for them to do, like activities, like where my kids were raised at one time, they had the skating rings, they had another little park, they had the after school program. And then like one year, everything was gone. Violence went up, the city, actually I was up north, but actually the city turned pretty rough, and I was glad my kids were almost grown about that time. But basically it's like outlets, something to do, and like that natural resource, our young people, our youth, that do need to be harnessed and redirected. If we could just have enough, you know what I'm saying, enough people that are really concerned about it, that are in place to open some more programs. Like you see rappers and basketball players and stuff opening up these community centers and stuff like that. You know, just something for them to do because they have to burn that energy. It's either going to be positive or it's either going to be negative, but they got to get that energy out. And I just believe that all the way around, we are responsible for, you know, the youth that we come in contact with. Some can be saved and some can't, but you do your best to reach out, you know?
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. Brother Mashinda?
All right. Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with most everything being said. You know, I mean, there's different angles on it. You know, I was listening to Brother Rio. He had disagreed in terms of, you know, the single parent household. And I respect, you know, his disagreement as well, you know, because it's a perspective. It makes sense, you know, from where he's coming from with, you know, and I get that. But what I was alluding to is this, that, you know, working in, you know, my own empirical research, you know, looking at, you know, people, youngsters, you know, from 9 years old, to maybe 17 years old, 18, going to the penal colonies and to the, you know, and over 90% of them come from that situation. So, and I saw it, you know, year after year after year, you know, and not to say that a two-parent household, like somebody said, you know, is going to yield these positive results. No, it takes work. I agree with Brother Hembrick when he was saying the bill, you know, it's and I think Brother Rio mentioned it as well. I think Brother Rio about the extended family, you know, the village, you know. I think that, and I was thinking that earlier when I was called upon in the conversation, you know, that's what went across my mind because I remember, you know, me growing up, you know, growing up in the same areas and witnessing what I witnessed. And so to conclude, it's not a right or wrong in this situation, in this conversation. It's more or less just perspectives. But, you know, there's the root issues, systemic problems, you know, and we talked about it coming from the, you know, starting from the home and whether it's okay, let's just go with mom. Because that's, you know, I said that at about 8 or 9 years old, and mom's kind of guided the ship, you know. And, you know, I turned out okay, you know, so it works. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, through my matriculation through life, my upbringing, there was a village out there, you know, and there was a village all around me, you know, and certain things, you know, I was checked if I, you know, was going this way or that way, you know. So I think that's very important. You know, music, I agree, music, oh, man, music is a universal situation where it does have an effect, you know, on the tone, on the mood of a lot of things, and so I'm thinking that though the like my dad told me years ago, and I heard Brother Hembrick said about by design, it's all by design. My dad told me that, oh man, when I was a little kid, you know, well maybe 15, you know, said it was this is by, you know, so the system, you know, and I was listening to like Berry Gordy and Don King, you know. Them brothers was instrumental in their time, but they didn't own any networks. You know, they didn't own, you know, they created records, they produced people, they were smart and they get contracts, they make their money, but still, you know, we know who controls even that situation, you know, distribute, you know, people, multiple hands in it. But, you know, but again, I respect the brothers, you know, and giving people jobs and, you know, and listening to music that I like, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm just saying that, you know, ownership is, you know, being included. You know, we got to teach these kids economics, you know, and all of that. We talked about this in several podcasts about financial literacy and learning all kind of things, you know, know thyself, you know, understanding where, you know, where it all began and move forward and all kind of angles, you know. But that's the problem, and what's happening is society's just, or the whoever is taking advantage of a situation. You know, the more problems it is, people are capitalizing off the violence. They capitalize, all these record companies, they capitalize off all of that. And so, but it's a business, you know. So we're kind of, and back to the original point, we're kind of out of control. The brother said, I understood the mafia concept. You know, yeah, we're out of control. You know, nobody's mind, you know, we're reckless and abandoned in a lot of ways. A lot of the, I go to high schools all the time and kids are, you know, bad. It's in certain situations, you know, it's like, but there's no guidance in the situation. You got people that are in charge, but they're not really engaging with the children. You know, it's amazing. So anyway, back full circle. Appreciate everybody's comments. You know, I don't have nothing new or more to add to right now.
Okay. And I wanted to mention earlier about the educational institutions. This is directly for educators. And this is what I've noticed being a teacher. Each individual campus, especially for administrators, each individual campus has its own special dynamics. And an administrator should know what those dynamics are. And there should be planning in place and implementations of interventions guided towards those special dynamics. And those are the things that has to be done. If ever I ever got a chance to be an administrator, and I do have my administrative credential, I would address the dynamics of the institution. That way I can plan for the children, and definitely violence would be curbed because you would have things in place for them whenever things happen, when these special dynamics pop up and you have to deal with it. So that's something that could help educational institutions. And they got to be able to deal with district administration and the running of their campus in that way. You got to be able to do both. So that's something that I wanted to add. So Professor Ra?
Appreciate what's been said, but I understand correctly. And I think everybody's made some excellent points, but I just want to try to look at it because this has been, you know, this has been my life. This is what I do, try to transform people into being righteous and good, starting with myself and then the family. You have to live the life you want people to be, and be an example. You know, it takes two people to make children from birth. So it takes two people to raise them. Now, can a single parent raise a man or woman? Yeah. But when you have two, it adds to the ability to supervise and resource-wise, as far as especially if both of them have incomes. But even for stability when a child, you know, they talk about latchkey kids was the problem because they go home and nobody would be there because both parents were working on things of that nature. But you got to have stability and when you bring people into the world, and you got to love them, and you got to not stop hugging and talking and having family meetings, and you have to teach and train your children the way you want them to be. But many parents, I worked for Stop the Violence and Increase the Peace Foundation under Khaled Shaw, and it was amazing how many parents didn't know what various drugs were, didn't know gang talk. The kids right in front of them calling each other cubs or blood, and they're not aware of what's going on. You have to educate yourself to be a strong parent, and you have to, yeah, listen to the music, but don't become a part of it. Don't go up and try to out-twerk your daughter, you know. But the point is that you You have to educate yourself, and you got to want your children. You can't look at them as burdens and things of this nature. Most kids are coming up in placement homes because of the role of drugs and the role of the industrial prison complex. And there's a lot of issues that behind all of it stems from racism and prejudice. People make money off of that. You know, when you go to jail, they make money off of running the jail. So, you know, they make, you know, those are the things. Music is good, but Tupac got popped at 25 years old. You know, a Biggie. I like Biggie. I'm big. I love how smooth he was. You understand? You know, he got popped. Their rappers are getting popped all the time. Flavor, he was good when he was with KRS. Public Enemy, and then all of a sudden he's with a white woman. You know, I mean, you got to live the life. Just sing about things, and people see you in contradictions. That's what I had to learn. I couldn't go in a classroom and tell people they shouldn't be using drugs, they shouldn't be doing that, and they hear that I came out of crack house, I came out of a weed house, I lived a contradiction. You understand? Hey man, it's not easy. You understand? Yeah, we have mafias. We have black mafias all over the place. Tootie Reese, Lil Willie, and all of them had the heroin and cocaine business in L.A. and Watts throughout the projects and everything. Street gangs went from street gang fighting to organized crime. They were running the drug business. That's why a lot of the shooting started. You had Bumpy Johnson in New York back in the days in the 20s. We've always had gangsters and had from hustlers and pimps. You know, the Mac, you know, Superfly, all of that. That's not, you don't want in that world. The life is short, and you end up giving the attorney all your money, and most of the time you go to prison. But the point is, they don't care. They made that picture with Wesley Snipes and Ice-T, what was that movie?
New Jack City.
New Jack City. I mean, look here. I don't care if I die young. I don't care. As long as I die rich. You know, I mean, what kind of life is that? You know, I mean, we got a lot of issues. But the point is that, you know, parenting is something you take serious. You got to be in good physical shape, good mental shape, proof of your thought. You have to know. You have to supervise your family. Know where your kids is all the time. Train them to, hey, you check in, check out. You understand? You know, I wouldn't let my daughters come home with nobody with no tattoos and earrings. They knew better than that. Well, it looked like coming home with somebody with a bunch of tattoos and sagging. You better, you know, you can't, not that I'm gonna beat them or anything, but hey, they know I didn't know that. I get on their case. I don't get on, hey, what are you doing? But you got to try to, the best cure to any problem is the prevention. Now, culture, the key crisis in our life is a culture crisis. We're drawing our values, as Kathy was saying, from America. It's American to be envious and greedy. It's American to steal and to rob. That's how this country was built. They stole it from the Native Americans and robbed Africa of us. I mean, So what you can't let the oppressor be your teacher. You can't let the people that enslave you be your teacher. And you can't find beauty in white people. That throws me off. How do you marry the people that enslave you? How do you fall in love with? We've had black entertainers that made money. You can't say Jay-Z don't control his business. You can't say that Snoop just bought Death Row Records. You can't say that Dr. Dre, who just gave Compton High $10 million for arts and didn't control his artists and his music. Somebody, Barry Gordy was all right, and that's for me. You know, when I was coming up, radio stations, you could call in and dedicate a song. You know, I want to dedicate the Dales Always Together to Sherry and all that. You can't dedicate some of these records these cats make. You know, and then some of the records the women was making. We had NWA, Niggas with Attitude. Then you had women coming out talking, oh, we BWA, Bitches with Attitude. Then you had another bunch of women talking about, oh, we HWA, Hoes with Attitude. Why? Because it's sold. And because white people promoted that music. Just like Joe was saying, they brought drugs into the community. They brought filth into the community. You understand? Lil Wayne become a Grammy Record Award. That's white folks giving him that award. I wouldn't even give him 2 cents. I never heard his record. Don't want to hear him. You understand? Now, if he wants to sit down and talk and he can give me some knowledge based upon his experience, yeah, but his records? Oh, I don't listen to nothing that messed my mind up. I'm a black man. Black people go to Africa all the time. And Ghana, we just had people from Ghana that Americans moved there. Rasha Key had the sister on, they got a vegetarian farm, a health center. You understand that black people go to Africa all the time. Liberia at one time in Sierra Leone was built by black people that repatriated on the continent of Africa. Most black people don't in America don't want to go back because they're American and they don't know how to go back. You understand? Some do. And Jerome Pratt died in Africa. He left, married a sister, American sister, and they lived in Africa and he died there. So, black people are on the continent of Africa, in Brazil, in Haiti. But America's international robbers and oppressors blockade them and make sure they can't get on their feet because they pose a threat to them if they become independent. They can't get their resources cheap. It's just like, it's a struggle, brother. And the only thing I'm saying is that, yeah, to think that one parent is better than two, that's wrong. You always want two strong, loving, caring parents. That offers stability. You have four eyes on your children. You have an extra income. You have people there that can cook and be there to help with the family. So that's nature, as Joe said, nature. You understand? But you have to want to live that life, and black men gotta want to be married and want to raise their children. Black women gotta want to be married, want to raise their children, want to be with the person they are. You got women that won't even be asked to be married. You know, they're 40, 50 years old and never been engaged. Not because there ain't men out there that could engage them, but they ain't settled down. They wait till they're almost 50 or 60 before they settle down. You know, because they out looking and hunting sexual consumption versus looking at sex as a product of reproduction and procreation and building soldiers, building your children to be soldiers. You understand? And being protectors, providers. A family is a unit. You got to teach everyone to play a part. You have family meetings every week. And you find out what's going on with them. You check their homework. Make sure that they're doing it. And if not, you get them help. You be on top of that. You let them know what's valuable to you. You teach them political activism. You teach them geography. You teach them about nature. If a kid has never been a part of nature, like in New York, some parts of St. Louis, Chicago, you know, you come up in skyscrapers and just concrete. Yeah, you never seen the animals. You never seen, as Joe say, the ocean, even though you're in Detroit and you got the Michigan River and all of that. East Coast ocean, you know, but I tell you what, it's a struggle, and you got to know where you are in order to be who you are. And when you know who you are, it don't make no difference where you are, because you're going to be you. Sante sana, Rashi.
Thanks, Professor Ra. Okay, Miss Linda just came, and I want to give her a chance to chime in on the topic this evening. Miss Linda?
I am here, but I'm in Orlando, Florida, and I'm in convention, and so I'm just more listening right now.
Okay, I just wanted to see if you wanted to chime in on the topic this evening.
Not at this time, because I'm in the middle of a lot of people.
Okay, thanks a lot.
I want to miss it, and I wanted to learn and listen.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Brother Joe?
Just want to make a few comments, and this is primarily for Brother Rio. I don't mean to be critical. I just want to enlighten him somewhat if he isn't already. The era that he says he grew up in, you know, early 70s on. First thing is about, you know, we don't have no country. You know, we may not have a physical one, but we should have one in our mind about the 13 million square miles that are across the Atlantic. I don't know what these rappers rap about that gave him a little knowledge. He mentioned something about Kemet. And I don't know anything about the rap world, and I had two of the most famous ones that's out there were former students of mine. Speaking of Suge Knight, he wasn't a rapper, and the current one, Kendrick Lamar. But I do know that a lot of this rap stuff that has went down, the stuff that they rapping about, ain't none of them hardly ever did any of that stuff themselves. I used to tell my students that. They talking about smoking somebody, and they had a gun in their hand, they might crap on themselves. But anyway, that's another story. And as far as our economic power base being in music, I mean, in entertainment and athletics. Wow. I like to substitute all of those people that you mentioned, Berry Gordy and Don King, with two other people that I think would help you out tremendously. One, Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, otherwise known as Malcolm X, and Marcus Garvey. Those two brothers laid out a format for us to get our minds where they need to be. I don't know if you ever had any chance to check them out, but I would recommend Message to the Grassroots by Malcolm and Philosophy and Opinions of Marcus Garvey. And as far as our resources that we have in the world, every European nation has gotten rich, industrialized themselves, now the Russians and Chinese are in on it now, is the resources that's in the ground in Africa. Although the Africans are not controlling it like they should be. That's why we need some more Idi Amin's to be born into the world so the Africans can take back what's righteously theirs and get rid of all of them invaders. And as far as music go, I think we need to go back to the original music, the drum. Wasn't no words, it was just a beat. And like Brother Rasha Key said earlier, a lot of the music, he loves the beat until it gets to the lyrics. with those lyrics is a plan to get us acting like we're acting. And I just want to end with this, because there's very few singers that I really take to heart. You know, Curtis Mayfield was one, the Impressions, James Brown, Gil Scott-Heron. And I just like to end this with one of the Impressions lyrics was, "Why don't you check out your mind? It's been with you all the time." Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Brother Joe. Okay, Brother Rico.
Hey, Brother Rico. Yeah.
I'm coming to you, and we're going to conclude with you.
All right. I appreciate the criticism, brother, from Brother Joe.
I don't mean it's a different era, you know, your era from my era, so I'm just trying to share, that's all.
No, I appreciate it. But all you know, I did study for a minute, you know. I studied for a minute right there on I'm not going to name it, but we all know where it was, right there on Compton Boulevard and Long Beach Boulevard. I was there for a minute. So I do have a little bit of understanding of what you were saying. But let me back up real quick. When I say a mafia, I use that as an example of accountability in our culture. There's no consequence, you know, so we have no consequences for our action. So it doesn't mean it has to be a violent consequence. It just needs to be a consequence for all of our actions, including my own. So as far as the when I speak on the natural resources, like you said, Malcolm X, yeah, that's a great teacher, you know. That can't be copied. But off of our natural resource here, you can't just get on a plane right now without a visa and a passport and go to Africa, you know? So we're here. This is our country. We built this. We built it for free. We built it for free for like 300 years for free. So this is ours, more so than anyone else's, pretty much. So, but our natural resource that we control, that's a multi-billion-dollar industry. If you look at it, where's our CBDs off of that? Where's our central business districts off of that? You know, that's where you create wealth in our community. You know, we can say, yeah, we have Black communities, but there's no central business districts off of that. We have no skyscrapers. We don't have triple net properties that are 60 stories, 70 stories in height. We don't control that. So from this natural resource that we have, meaning ourselves, I can make a million, 20, 30, 50 million, like the people that you mentioned, the Dr. Dre's, the Suge's, the Jay-Z's. These are billionaires. They made it just off of their image and their likeness and their name. So that's all of us. That's what we have, that natural resource. Natural resource, but we don't control it because there's someone else that controls our name and image and our likeness that don't look like us. And they're going to take 20% off top, whether if it's a sports agent, an entertainment agent, a lawyer, they're taking 20% off top. So that money doesn't get recycled back into our community. That doesn't get recycled back. And even from ourselves, we on the 30-second rule. You know, we get paid on Friday. We at the mall Friday night, on Amazon Friday night. We don't recycle it. So, and then I think like scarcity is one of the things that, in my opinion, creates violence, because we come from a culture. We come from the Nile. So we always had things in abundance. We shared it with Julius Caesar. Hey, man, take this, brother. We ain't tripping. Cleopatra shared everything with him. We ain't tripping off of that. We got it in abundance down here. It don't get cold down here. But when they taught us about musical chairs, they taught us about scarcity. And that's when you get violent, because you don't think you're going to have it no more. Because that's what some cultures had. When it was cold north of the equator, way north of the equator, you had to have that mentality because you didn't know when you was going to eat again. So you had a selfish mentality because you operated off of scarcity. And that's one of the things that I think our youth is thinking, hey, man, we got to get it now. No, man, it's going to be here, brother. As long as they pulling it out the ground, man, they're going to make it again. It's mass produced, man. Take your time. But we're not teaching them about that. And that's one of the things that I think to go back and accountability. I got to hold myself accountable for that. I got to hold myself accountable for that because I need to be out here teaching the youth more about finance and development. And real estate development, real estate finance period, where they can create generational wealth. I'm not doing that. So that's going to be my contribution starting this year, more so than I have been. So, yeah, but I understand. I follow Marcus Garvey, my son with the Marcus Garvey right there off of Slauson back in, shoot, man, you're talking like 2000, 2001, 2003. He went to Marcus Garvey Elementary. So I know I followed up teachings of Malcolm. You know, I'm aware of it. My father was come off the Panther Party up in Oakland. So I understand all of that. But we got to think about how we going to harness our own natural resource and keep this money. Keep all of it for us. You know what I'm saying? Keep it for us. And that mafia, it doesn't have to be violent, but we got to know how to protect us too from any outside foreign entity. We got to protect us. You know, you shoot one, you done shot all of us. So we supposed to go after that. I didn't seen it all, man. I mean, I remember being younger when Latasha Harlins got killed. I'm like, man, that's crazy. That's crazy right now. I mean, I seen more store owners back then pull a weapon and be ready to dump on you, or if they didn't, more so than what the people did, them Capitol police officers did when the people rushed the Capitol on January 6th. We don't have, no one is afraid of us because they know all we're going to do is wear out a pair of shoes and march about it. And after about 2-3 months of marching and wearing out your shoes, we're going to go back to partying. We got to have some type of structure there that's going to be like, hey, wait up. You can't touch this like that. We'll police this. We don't need you here to police it. And we're going to police our youth too, where the youth is going to say, man, you got to answer to us. You want to see the real world some days? Go to a level 4 yard. Go to a level 3 yard. It's structure in there for the most part. It's structure in there. That's the real world. That's how it really works. All of this other stuff is just lipstick on a pig. It's ugly, but they put lipstick on it. So you want to see the real world? Visit one. But it's structure in there. It's accountability in there. It's somebody that you got to answer to. I don't care what ethnic group you're part of. You got to answer to somebody. And that's what we got to have. It got to be consequence for our actions. We don't have the right to mess up our name, image, and likeness. I don't have the right to mess up my name, my image, and my likeness. So that's what I mean by the mafia mentality. Not that we have to be out here. Nah, the people that Brother Amon Ross spoke about, the Bumpy Johnsons and the, you know, I wasn't in that era, so I can't, you know, but they didn't really, it's not like the consequence thing, it didn't trickle down. It wasn't a trickle down effect to where, hey man, what he started, there's still a consequence here for your actions, brother. So I think that's more so where our youth is. It's like, man, you know, ain't nobody gonna do nothing to us. We can do this, that, and the third right now. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of violence. It's crazy violence. I mean, it wasn't like this. And it was gangs. Real hardcore gangs when I was growing up. Hardcore, but it was still some type of like, it was structured a little different than it is now. Right now, it's just like, it's wild, man. We losing kids every day. It seems like it's a rapper getting popped. Every day, it's a little kid getting popped for nothing. Just getting popped for nothing, just because they got a gun. just because they want to hear what it sound like. It seemed like, I just want to hear it sound like. And that's like, that's disturbing, because we gonna be, I got to rely on these kids to take care of me in 20 years. You know, I got to rely on that. Who going to protect us in 20 years, 30 years? Who going to protect you? So that's what I mean by accountability in our culture, in our community. So I'll leave with that, Brother Rigo.
All right. I appreciate it, man. It's an excellent topic this evening. And we look like we're going to have to continue it, because I know people wanted to probably respond to some things that you said again. But we'll leave it for another time. Okay. I appreciate you coming, Brother Rio, and starting this topic. Appreciate everything. Good topic. Good responses. And I want to tell you that this is a platform where that accountability starts. You know, it starts somewhere. And by you being here tonight, that's showing the way to go. You know, the ideas need to be developed. And like I said, the accountability should be a value system. That should be the accountability, a viable value system. But we'll continue to discuss this and talk about things. I appreciate everybody coming this evening. Professor Rod.
Yeah.
Our guest for next week is Linda Shorter, right?
Yeah.
So we got Linda Shorter coming on next week on Monday. And then on Wednesday, we have the conductor. And the topic is the cutthroat reality of true Black economics. So that should be interesting. I'm looking forward to that, like I look forward to everyone. But that's a different twist on things. So I want to hear about that. So I'm going to leave everybody with this. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody have a good evening.